All through history, people have gathered in societies, and every single time they do, they have problems in their societies, their social problems. And we're in this series, and over the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about various social problems, different things that happen. And it doesn't matter where you go in history or what part of the world you go to, there's always a social problem. When I was in college, our history professor said, the only thing we've ever learned from history is we haven't learned anything from history. And I understand it. Really, probably a better way to say it is we learn stuff from history, but we don't have the power to change anything. It just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating the same social problems, same social problems. And Jesus spoke to the issue, and one of the things he said is that when you start to follow me, you'll be able to do things that you can't do by yourself and without me, and that you'll be able to make a difference in society in ways that nobody else can. When you start to follow Jesus, one of the things I said right off the bat is, wow, I'm able to do stuff I wasn't able to do before, and I can make a difference in a way I was never able to make a difference. He said it like this, it's in your notes, let me read it to you. You are the light of the world, a city on a hill, glowing in the night for all to see. Don't hide your light, let it shine for all. Let your good deeds glow for all to see, so they may praise your heavenly Father. So the idea is that when we point to Jesus, it can make a difference in our society. And so that's the backdrop of this series we're doing. Now today the big idea, right in your notes, is Jesus gives us the power to live together and love each other. So the idea is we're pointing to him. And the topic today is racism. Just jot it into your notes. And why point to Jesus? Well, you can't point to religion because we know that religion causes a lot of conflicts between people. A lot of conflicts between the races happen because of religion. Can't point to government. I mean, governments are always fighting over race and fighting over genealogies and where people were born and their racial tendencies. Can't point to politics. I mean, yeah, right. And politics doesn't unite the races, it divides them. But with Jesus, it was something different. There was a way that he can live with us and love us that causes us to be able to live with each other and love each other. And that's the backdrop and what we're going to talk about today. We're going to look at a story. It's the definitive story about Jesus and race and how he handled race. And so we're just going to sort of read through some things. And if you don't have a Bible, they're free outside. You can grab it. Someone saw this story and he wrote it down. He put it in the Bible. And here's the backdrop to it. So Jesus is emerging. You know, no social media, no movies to go to, no internet. And so he's becoming more and more popular and people want to see him. So he's emerging, becoming more and more popular, more and more popular. And right in the midst of this popularity, he decides to leave his hometown and go down to Jerusalem. Now, a little bit of geography in here. He lives way up in the north. Jesus sort of came from the west side type. He was like a west side guy. So he comes from northern Israel, and he's going to go down to Jerusalem. And he has to pass through an area called Samaria. In fact, the author says he's going to pass through. He had to go through Samaria. Now, a bit of history. Samaria is right in the middle of northern Israel and southern Israel, and there's huge racial tension there between all the Jewish people, and here's why. 700 years before, the Assyrians, so think Iraq, Iran, they conquer this part of Israel, and as is their custom, they cart off like two-thirds of them back to their homeland. They put them to work doing different things. And then they move in a bunch of Assyrians, Iraq and Iran people, and they conquered Arabia. They move them into, and they move them all down into Samaria, this area that used to be Israel. So now you have this huge mixture of people going on. And people from Iran and Iraq and Arabia, and they're mixing with the Jewish people, and they start to intermarry. It's very interracial, interracial marriages there. And they mix their religions, and they mix how they like to eat, and how they dress. And there's like this big, huge mixture of people that live in Samaria. They're kind of Jewish, but kind of not Jewish. And they're right in the middle, and Jesus is going to pass directly through there. Now, there's huge racial tension there, a lot of racial tension, because Jewish people don't associate with them. They don't have anything to do with them. They're sort of those kind of people like, we don't intermarry, we don't adopt your customs, we don't have anything to do with you. You know, they're kind of like Raider fans. They're just sort of like, we're our own thing over here, and, you know. And so Jesus has said he's going to pass through there, which is a shocker. Because Jewish people, not only do they not go through Samaria, there's an actual road. It's a long way that goes all the way around Samaria so you can get to the southern part of Jerusalem. They don't even go there. They won't go in their houses. They won't eat food with them. But it says he's going to pass through there. And here's the reason. And just jot this in your notes somewhere. It's not anything you'll fill in. But because there's a divine appointment. And God makes those. On occasion, he just sets an appointment for us. There's a divine appointment. He's going to meet a woman there alongside of a well, and they're going to have this conversation about race. Okay? And so he gets down into this area of Samaria, and when he gets there, let me read you something. And so he came to the city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near a plot of ground that Jacob gave his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being exhausted from his journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour, which is noon. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." And he goes into great detail about this well and this area that they're going to meet. And here's why. Even though there was huge racial tension between these people, they all charted their genealogy and their family backgrounds to the exact same person. His name was Abraham. He had a son named Isaac, who had a son named Jacob. And Jacob was someone that both sides agreed upon. So here's what I want to say. Jesus chose common ground to meet her on. Now, Samaritan people, they don't like Jewish people. Jewish people don't like Samaritan people, but they both love them some Jacob. It's a place they could agree upon. One of the reasons I love college sports and I'm a fan, I love high school sports, love professional sports is because we can put everything aside and we can just come together and agree that the Utes are going to be the top four this year somehow. They're still going to get there. So we can just all agree on that. We can put everything else aside. Sometimes there's something common that we can just sort of, like, and this is common ground. He meets her at some place they can agree upon. They both agree Jacob is significant to us. And so that's where they're at. Let me read you a little bit more now. Now, write in your notes, the number one, a drink from their cup. So a woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Circle that. It's important later. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." In fact, Jews even called them Samaritan dogs. They had a racial slur for them, just like we have in our day. We have racial slurs. They had one in their day, Samaritan dogs. And Jesus is sitting with this Samaritan woman, and she asks him, she says, "What are you doing here?" Now, first question, how does she know he's a Jew? He doesn't say he's a Jew. Nobody else is there announcing the fact that a Jew is here. So it must be obvious by the way he looks and the way he talks and the way he acts, his accent, that he's Jewish. Here's the point. I don't have to, you don't have to, put our racial identity aside to be able to be with other people of a different race. We don't have to pretend to be something we're not. God's not asking anybody to morph into some other kind of person. Who he created you to be, all life has value. Black lives matter. White lives matter. Brown lives matter. All colors matter. Because they all matter the same to God. Whatever race he made you, whatever background you have, that was the best it could have been. And so we see Jesus, he doesn't put anything aside. He just shows up exactly who he is, trusting God's power that somehow a connection is going to be made. And she sort of, you know, pushes him back a little bit. He's like, "Well, you know, I'd like to get a drink of water here." And, you know, she's not just like grabbing the first water pot she has and giving him a drink of water. He asks her for a drink of water. And she sort of, in the story, pushes him back a little bit. She's like, you know, who are you, a Jewish man? Gonna show, you think you're going to put your lips on my cup? This is a Samaritan cup. You're not going to get any drink of water from me. And then she's like, look at you. You don't have a cup. You don't have a rope. You don't have a bucket. Every once in a while, if you have been the person that has been treated unjustly in your race, you get that golden opportunity to say, how you like me now? I've got the power. And that's how she treats him initially. She's sort of like, who do you think you are? And Jesus seems to be okay with it. Lesson number two. When people have been hurt or bruised because of racial injustice, don't be so fast to point out their misbehavior. Something hurtful's driving that. You can just be patient. That's one of the ways God's power shows up, is I can take a little bit of pressure from them. And what's interesting about the story is that he just sort of sits with her for a moment, and as he does, it becomes clear that he's not going to go away, and either is racial tension between us ever going to go away. If God wanted us to all look the same and act the same, if he all wanted us to be identical, he'd have done it that way. Have you noticed that God has built into our existence a need for him? We run into stuff all the time. We're like, I don't know how to handle this. This is too big for me. I don't have the power to deal with this. And racial stuff is difficult. And issues of color is hard to understand. You have to be willing to drink out of someone else's cup to get it. I saw this interview with Chris Rock, and he's talking about this whole issue of race and how we don't understand it and how it's different. And it's in his world, but I thought it applied to ours, so check this out.
Because being famous as a black guy is a little different than being famous as a white guy. Tom Hanks is an amazing actor. Denzel Washington is a god to his people, okay? Denzel Washington has a responsibility to his people that Tom Cruise and, you know, and Liam Neeson and all these guys, they don't have. They just make their art. And no one goes, hey, Tom Cruise, stay white. Don't forget your whiteness. Come back and visit white people. What you doing for white people, Tom Cruise? Nobody says that to Tom Cruise. Yo, Stallone, what you doing for Italians, man? What are you doing for Italians? Like, no one says that.
What do they say to Denzel?
They want to know that Denzel loves his people, that Denzel is doing stuff for his people. And they feel Denzel's highs and lows more than white people feel Tom Hanks does a bad movie. There's going to be another good movie by somebody white next week. It's like, yeah. You know, when Denzel does a bad movie, I might not see a good black movie for a year.
Yeah. And a little closer to home, right in East Lake Church, two women that are friends, one of color, one white, and live in the same neighborhood, same economics, kids go to the same school. They get along well. Their families hang out together. They're friends. And the white woman has always had a little trouble trying to decide or understand, like, what really is different about us. I mean, our husbands are kind of the same age, we're the same age, we make the same amount of money, our kids go to the same school. I mean, our houses in the same, within the same neighborhood, we go to the same church, East Lake Church. Like, what is so different about us? And one day, they're not even talking about race. They're talking about parenting. And as they're talking about parenting, the person of color, and I'm going to say it, black person of color, mentioned that when her sons were growing up, she trained them how to act if they got pulled over by a policeman. And that's when the white girl understood. Because she's like, I never did that. I never even had to think about that. That's like never even passed my mind. And the black was like, seriously? We started that in kindergarten. And we've been training them all their life how to act. And that's when the white girls started to understand there is a difference in how we live in our world and how we grow up. I have sort of an interracial marriage. My wife is Hawaiian Portuguese. She's born and raised in Hawaii, which is a completely different country as far as I'm concerned. And it's like, but it's interracial. There's lots of differences in our backgrounds. And Clarice and I are going to get married, so we're announcing it to everybody. And we go to our grandparents' house, we're going to announce to them, like, I'm the white boy coming in, you know. And so it's just like, you know, we sit down at the table, and the grandfather disappears for a little while, and he comes back up to the table, and he's got this huge jar of pickled onions. He's got all these onions floating around with these red chili peppers inside, and he puts it down on the table, doesn't say a word to me. He takes the top off, he goes over to the cabinet, and he gets two little saucers, and he scoops out a big pile of onions, and he sets it down in front of me. And then I gotta tell you something, my very first thought was, I ain't taking your test. So I ain't marrying you, I'm marrying her. I mean, my very first thought was, I like my onions cooked on my hamburger. I don't like them like that. I don't want those. I found out later they're called Maui onions, and they're a delicacy in the Hawaiian menu. He sets them down in front of me, and he just sits down, doesn't say a word to me. My first inclination was to say, no chance, man. Let's get something straight right now. Whose cup are you unwilling to drink out of? Let's get a little further than just race now. They've extended a cup to you and you're like, let me see what's in there first. You take a drink, let me watch. You know, I am so grateful that I had a moment of sanity because I just reached down and started eating those onions as best I could. When I got done, I put the plate out and said, thank you, may I have another? And when he took the plate, he loaded it up with onions, and he turned to my wife, Clarice, and he held me and said, you know a good man. Whose cup are you willing to drink out of? Doesn't look anything like yours. Doesn't come from your background. Because if you're ever going to learn, if we're ever going to understand, if we're going to make any progress at all, that's how it happens. Now she pushes Jesus back pretty hard. She says, you know, you think you're going to get a drink of water from me? He's like just sitting with her. He doesn't leave. You think I'm going to give you a drink of water? You think after everything that the Jews and the Samaritans have gone through, you're just going to roll up here and ask me for a drink? It's like, I got a lot of issues with you. And that happens in our relationships, by the way. People even do that with God. They're like, oh, now you want me to turn to you, God? Where were you when my parents divorced? Where were you when my friend was sexually abused? Where were you when I couldn't get through high school? Like, now I'm supposed to turn to you, God? That's what's happening here. She's like, now you're going to show up? Like, where you been through everything I've been going through? And when we meet people like that, and we always do, man, it's such an opportunity to be patient and just sit with them like Jesus did. Just like, I'm not pushing anything. Do you notice he hasn't even said anything about God? All she knows about him is he's a nice man. He hasn't brought up God. He hasn't said a word about God yet. Just, I'm willing to be with you and drink your cup. Let this drop into your heart. People have their reasons. And the power of God can deal with their reasons. Let's push them aside. He's willing to be with people patiently and loving and walk them through it. This is what he says to this woman. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that's saying to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Go a little deeper now. Jesus said to her, everyone who drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water that I shall give him will become in him a well of water springing up into eternal life. The woman said to him, sir, give me this water so that I will not thirst nor come here to draw. Now he's starting to get her attention. And that happens too as people are moving towards God. And God starts to get their attention. She's like, wait a minute, now you're telling me, I think I heard something about you. Tell me your name again. I heard there's some man walking around like, you know, he's like doing miracles and there's stories about him doing things that nobody has ever seen. It's like, wait a minute, did someone even say he walked on water? Are you that guy? Hold up now. Maybe I am going to give you, tell me again what you're going to do for me, because if I don't have to come out here and work every single day, maybe I do have some water for you. You see the process starting now. Now write number two in your notes. Use Christ as your compass. So now there's a tension. I'm sitting with them. I'm drinking out of their cup. I'm telling you how things could change in their life. Here's what happens next. Jesus said to her, go call your husband and come here. So he goes from drinking water to talking to her about who she's sleeping with. Now he's all up in her business, which wouldn't have happened unless he was willing to drink out of her cup. See, that's the problem with religion. A lot of times religion, it shows up like this. It says, listen, if you want to drink out of this cup, here's all the changes you got to make. Here's all the things that got to happen differently. You're like, well, you want to drink out of this cup. There's a lot of changes you have to make. There's a lot of things that have to happen. If you're going to be on the inside and come join us, but they're not willing to drink out of the other person's cup. They would never meet them at a pub and talk over a beer. They would never go to their house. They would never talk to them about a movie that was inappropriate. They would never go see a band downtown. They wouldn't do any of those type of things. It's like, whoa, that's what you're into? Take a shower when I get home. A lot of times religion does that. It's like, I'm not willing to jump into your life and be a part of your world. I don't want any part of any of what you're going through. Just get over here and drink out of this cup, because this is the only cup and the right cup. And here, take a sip and everything will be better. As if it's some kind of magic potion. Jesus has been drinking and sitting with her for a long time, talking with her. And he says, go call your husband. Here's what she says to him. The woman answered, I have no husband. Jesus said to her, you are right in saying I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and he whom you now have is not your husband, so you have spoken truthfully. So now he's really talking to her. To which she says, the woman said to him, sir, I perceive you are a prophet. I guess so. I mean, he's talking to her all about her life. Here's what he's trying to say to her. He's trying to say to her, listen, man, are you letting race keeping you from turning to God about other problems in your life too? Race is a huge, huge issue, man. Huge issue. It's not the only issue. She's had five husbands already. She's got problems. He's just like sort of checking in. He's saying, do you have other problems in your life too, and you're not turning to God because of racial issues? Is the racial issue dominating so much that you can't turn to God about anything in your life? And it goes on. The woman says, our fathers worshipped in this mountain, but you people, there's a racial slur. You people say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship. So she definitely has some religious baggage. When's the last time you were having a conversation with someone, you were kind of talking about God, and they kept wanting to turn it back to religion? That's what she's doing. She said, listen, you know, and the problem in Samaria was, is they had mixed so many religions in together. I mean, so many people had brought their ideas and they mixed all these religions. It's kind of this Jewish foundation, but they'd even rewritten the Ten Commandments, so they're not totally Jewish. They got magic poured. It's like this big super religious, and they're everything in there. It's all mixed together. And then the morals are all like, how are you supposed to live? Can you have one husband or five husbands? Do you go to the temple? Do you not go to the temple? What's okay to eat? What's not okay to eat? And basically, she's literally like trying to say to him, like, listen, I've got a lot of problems when it comes trying to turn to God. This religion stuff has me so confused. And Jesus cuts right through it, and this is what he says to her. God is spirit. It's bigger than religion. There's no religion that can hold it. It's bigger than religion. better than religion. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. Here's all he's saying to her. He's saying, listen, if racism is your compass, there's going to be lots of times you don't turn to God. If success is your compass, if sex is your compass, if family is your compass, here's the definition of truth. Objective standard by which reality is measured, God's point of view on any subject. This is all he's saying to me. He said, listen, I understand. Jesus gets racial tension, man. He's from Galilee in the north of Israel. That's like the west side, man. That's like West Valley Magna all rolled up into one. I mean, Jesus is not like a pretty boy. Like, he gets racial tension. He says, I understand, but you're allowing your issues with race. He's like, girl, you've been married 5 times, and you're on the 6th man now. Are you sure you don't want to turn to God for some help? Are you going to let your issues with race and how you've been treated keep you from turning to God so you can find out what's true? Have you ever done that? Maybe it isn't race, it's some other issue in your life. And you're just like, not until that one gets settled. Not until I get an answer for that. And you know what? It is a big issue to you. And it's important. I hope it gets resolved. But you don't have to let it dominate you and be the sole qualifier of your life. Man, unless this gets settled in me, unless I get an answer, unless God does something about this, then I'm not playing. He drinks out of her cup for a while, and he says, listen, why don't you just start turning to God and let him deal with all this stuff? So what she says, the woman said to him, I know the Messiah is coming, who's called the Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things. Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. If anybody ever asks you, does Jesus ever say that he is the Christ? There it is. The woman left her water pot, went her way into the city, and said to the men, come see a man who told me all the things I ever did. Could this be the Christ? They went out into the city and came to him. Now, how do we know that Jesus got through to her? Circle this in, like, she left her water pot. That's her way of saying, Jesus, if you want to drink, if you want my life, if you're willing to be with me, I need a new compass. She leaves her water pot behind. It's just a sign. I'm opening my heart. I'm saying, okay, God. He got through to her. Now, number three, write in your notes, be a thermostat. So here comes his buddies back. Meanwhile, the disciples urged him, say, Rabbi, eat. But he said to them, I have food to eat of which you do not know. Therefore, the disciples said to one another, has anyone brought him anything to eat? So they show up now. Jesus was smart enough to leave them behind because they have way major racial issues. So that he sends them off, and they come back now, and they see what's happening, what's going on, and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, Jesus, come on, man. Can't we just get a bite to eat and get out of here? I mean, do you have to cause all this? Meanwhile, the person's telling the story. Meanwhile, it's like it's a ho-hum. Martin Luther King wrote a letter from a jail in Birmingham. It was addressing this whole issue of meanwhile. I'll get to it someday. Arrested because of a civil rights peaceful demonstration, thrown in jail, and while he was there, the white ministers in Birmingham published an open letter to him saying, please stop. You're causing too much trouble. And he wrote a letter. The story goes he wrote it on bits of newspaper and on the sides of margins, and he smuggled it out, open letter. And I've got it here. I want to read bits to you. Martin Luther King, Birmingham Jail. I've heard the numerous Southern religious leaders admonish the worshipers to comply with the desegregation decision because it is the law. But I have longed to hear White ministers declare this, follow the decree because integration is morally right. And because the Negro, his word, is your brother. In the midst of blatant injustices inflicted upon the Negro, I have watched white churchmen stand on the sideline and mouth pious irrelevancies and sanctimonious trivialities in the midst of a mighty struggle to rid our nation of racial and economic injustice. I have heard many white ministers say those are social issues with which the gospel has no real concern. Traveled the length and breadth of Alabama and Mississippi and all the other southern states on sweltering summer days and crisp autumn mornings. I've looked out at the South's beautiful churches with their lofty spires and pointing heavenward, and I beheld the impressive outlines of their massive religious education buildings over and over again. I have found myself asking, what kind of people worship here? Who is their God? There was a time when the church was very powerful, in the time when the early Christians rejoiced at being deemed worthy to suffer for what they believed in. In those days, the church was not merely a thermometer that recorded the ideas and principles of popular opinion. It was a thermostat that transformed the mores of society. Meanwhile, or understand that with God's power, you can make a difference. And this story has the greatest ending ever. Let me read it to you. Many of the Samaritans in that city believed in him because of the word of the woman who testified, "He told me all that I ever did." So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to remain with them, and he stayed with them 2 days. Man, just hours ago, the racial tension is so thick they can't even have a glass of water together. And now by invitation, he's hanging out for 2 days with them. That's power. And many more believed because of his word. They said to the woman, "Now we believe not because of what you said, for we have heard for ourselves and know that this man is indeed the Christ, the Savior of the world." Talk about your happy endings, man. That's awesome. Be willing to drink out of their cup. Help them see that, man, everybody's got their stuff. And Jesus cares. And you can change stuff. Light of the world.